Peace Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Inner Sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today is the United Nations. And our opening thought is by Alice Bailey. And Alice Bailey, by the way, is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, and Lucis Trust sponsors this show. And her thought is, spirituality is essentially the establishing of right human relations, the promotion of goodwill, and the establishing of a true peace on earth as the result of these two expressions of divinity. And I've always wondered about goodwill, but I think just goodwill to me at this point, after reading some of the works of Alice Bailey, has a lot to do with wishing every creature to be free of pain and suffering, and to just experience the joy of existence, and to wish that to every living creature, maybe even inanimate things as well. Can you give your thoughts on this opening statement by Alice Bailey?
Well, in that opening statement, she really sums up the essence of the United Nations, whose anniversary is observed on October 24th, which is why we have timed this program for now. Perhaps people don't think of the United Nations as being a spiritual achievement, but it is, when you consider this statement that spirituality is essentially the establishing of right human relations. That's the whole raison d'etre of the United Nations, to bring about right human relations among the nations of the world. And in fact, it's said in the Ageless Wisdom that the keynote for our present cycle in our planets and solar system's evolution is right human relations. This is the crux of the problem to be solved on Earth at the present cycle of evolution. And the achievement of right human relations depends upon goodwill and the establishing of a true peace. There are a lot of people that pray for peace, that march for peace, that appeal for peace, but I often wonder if they really understand what exactly they are hoping will come with an era of peace. So many people think peace is the opposite of war. We put down our guns and then we have peace. But in fact, peace is the outcome, the effect of right human relations. You can have a ceasefire and not have a true peace. You just have a temporary cessation of gunfire, of war, but it isn't a real peace. Peace is the effect of right human relations, and that's what the United Nations works for. We're familiar with the idea that the human being has a soul, but the writings of Alice Bailey also point out that nations have souls. And if you think of the United Nations as a forum for the souls of the world's people in the embodiment of nations, then it becomes a very spiritual place.
Yes, I think the miracle that the United Nations was founded at all lies in the fact that human consciousness was finally ready to establish this great forum. It was ready after the great crisis of World War I and II. We finally were jolted out of our lethargy and come to the realization that we need to find a new way to avert the scourge of war as a way of settling disputes. And so the United Nations came out of that time of crisis.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the Charter of the United Nations expresses the state of mind and the hope of the United Nations beautifully. It says, the opening lines, "We, the peoples of the United Nations, are determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought untold sorrow to mankind, and to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women and of nations large and small, and to establish conditions under which justice and respect for the obligations arising from treaties and other sources of international law can be maintained, and to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom." Those are the opening goals of the United Nations Charter, which was drafted in 1945 in San Francisco, and which is one of the great spiritual documents of the world. People might think, well, it's just a piece of paper, but when a nation joins the United Nations, it gives its consent to abiding by the conditions laid out in the Charter. And it's a moral commitment that I think is a lot more than just lip service. One of the things that really gets me is people who say that the United Nations or any similar global gathering is a place just for talk. I heard somebody say that last night in a television discussion program. Oh, it's just talk, talk, talk. We don't have any more time for talk. Well, what's the alternative? Gunfire? Yeah, setting off true. A bomb? I'd prefer to talk, thank you. Let's keep talking. Keep the lines open. Yeah. And it's true, the UN does sometimes seem in danger of collapsing under a mass of paperwork and agreements and discussions and words. But all the talk has led to a great deal of progress for humanity, mm-hmm. not only through the General Assembly, which is where the governments of nations meet every fall, and that's going on now, but the special agencies of the United Nations, which are less well known and that do so much good work for humanity. I was recently somewhere in a public place in an elevator where I heard someone talking about a conference he had just attended, a UN conference, where they gathered to work out consensus on geographical names. And somebody said, well, why is that important? And he said, well, it's really important that all of the people of the world agree on what to call the various mountains and rivers and regions of the world so we all know what we're talking about. For example, for charting flight paths, you have to be sure you're all talking about the same spot in northwestern Siberia. That's an aspect of the UN's work, this kind of global convening of minds to reach consensus that people don't know much about.
No, and I think if you think about it, think what the world would be like if we hadn't founded the United Nations. We probably would have gone through World War III by now. So, I mean, it has stopped a lot of conflict from erupting. I think all that talk mm-hmm. has a place.
Mm-hmm. And people often accuse the UN of being ineffective. It's only as effective as the member nations allow it to be. I always wonder why people think the UN should be different than or better than or something other than the member nations that compose it. If you think about it, it's a reflection, a mirror image of the state of the world's people. And in fact, it's a very flattering image, in my opinion. It gives a better expression of the potential within humanity than the individual nations do if you examine them one by one. The collective UN body gives, I think, a very positive depiction of the state of human consciousness today. For all its foibles and weaknesses as a system, when you think about it, how could it be much better than it is, where you have something like 190 nations from all different parts of the world, different cultures, different traditions, different languages, different types of government? You've brought them all together and you expect them all to agree? That's amazing. And in fact, they do reach agreement time and again on various treaties and initiatives, the law of the seas being one, the rights of the child being another. It's quite astonishing that there's any kind of agreement at all. People accuse the UN system of being slow to accomplish much, but they are committed to the principle of consensus, as I understand it, which means people have to reach an agreement before an initiative is passed. That's a lot more difficult than taking a vote and having the majority win and the minority lose. Too bad for you. Consensus requires that everybody come around to a point of view that is acceptable. That takes sometimes great effort and some sacrifice and a lot of patience, but that's how the UN works.
Sometimes if they don't agree, if a nation, the representative of a nation, doesn't agree with either side, then they can simply abstain. And that is not a negative vote, that's simply an abstention, and which allows for a consensus to come about. You don't have to take a stand necessarily.
Right.
Well, hopefully one day man will evolve to a point where violence will not be an option to settling disputes, but we're not there yet. But I think if there's any one organization that can be a catalyst to getting us to that point of consciousness, I think it's the UN. Does the United States need the UN, or does the United Nations mainly look after the smaller nations?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
that was
to both. Yes to both. Yes, the United States needs the United Nations, and yes, the UN mainly, I think, protects... fosters the needs and the well-being of the smaller nations. Within the General Assembly, every member nation has one vote. All the votes are equal. This upsets some people that a nation the size of the United States, with some, 260 million people, has one vote equal to, some Caribbean island like St. Lucia, with maybe under 100,000 people. But these nations take on they have their platform within the UN system, no matter how small they are, no matter how poor they are. They have a voice, they have a place, they have a forum for airing their views and for being heard. This is tremendously important for the smaller nations. But for the United States, it needs the United Nations just as much, I believe, because regardless of your size or your power, every living thing today is being required to integrate itself into the larger whole. This is the law, the spiritual law of the present time. It's the law of synthesis, which we have discussed on past programs. Everything on earth is governed by this great law, and it's what's driving all of these amalgamations, and it's the spiritual influence behind globalization, which is initially working out in some ways that are very harmful and threatening. But behind it is this great energy of synthesis that's bringing about the conglomerates, the amalgamations, the global treaties. The United States needs to incorporate itself within the larger world just like every nation does, and that's what the UN provides, that forum.
That's the same pattern of incorporation into the larger whole that the United States has already gone through. If you think about it, in our early history, the states were very very much. Some of them were not really ready to join the big and become a United States. And so all the states in the United States need a federal government.
Right.
And we have this same pattern working out in our own country. So
European Union's another example.
Exactly. And so this same pattern is what is really moving the world, the nations of the world together. And that's why we have to, I think, extending that pattern from the nation to the global whole is the reason why we have to take part in the United Nations forum and the network.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and our topic for today is the United Nations. We have a gift for you today, and I'll tell you how you can acquire that gift. It's a booklet, and the title of the booklet is Supporting the United Nations, What You Can Do to Help. And I think you'll find it very interesting, and there's so much to it, and I think it gives you a lot of unique ideas, too, that that'll give you pause for thought. However, to acquire the booklet Supporting the United Nations and What You Can Do to Help, give us a call on our toll-free number. We'll be happy to send it out to you, 1-866-695-8247. Once again, 1-866-695-8247. That's the number to call if you want that gift that we'll send out to you, the booklet. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUSIS. Think of New York LUSIS, NY-LUSIS, 1-866-NY-LUSIS. All the work of the LUSIS Trust, including this radio program, is funded by the voluntary donations of people like yourselves who support the goals of the LUSIS Trust. We are not endowed, nor do we have a wealthy benefactor who helps to pay for this program. We depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals. So please give if you want these programs to continue on the air. Donations can be sent to LUSIS Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, donations can be sent to LUSIS Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. A lot of people wonder who we are and what it's all about, and I think the most frequently asked question that we receive is LUSIS Trust a religion? No, we're not a religion. We are, for lack of a better expression, we're a spiritual philosophy organization, and people who come to our meetings come from all walks of life and a multiple number of religious backgrounds, and I guess if there's one thing that smacks of commonality, it's that we all are looking forward to and try to work on what needs to be done for mankind to improve. So once again, if you'd like to find out more about us, 1-866-695-8247, and also that's the number to call if you want that booklet. In a time of global tension, what role can the United Nations play?
I think after, 57 years of existence, the United Nations role is even more critical today than it was when it was founded in the last days of the World War. The world is a lot more complicated. The weapons have reached a stage of development that endangers all of us. Those of us who remember something like Chernobyl a few years ago know that all too well. We will all survive together, or we'll potentially go down together, because the potential for destruction is on such a massive level. It was just a couple months ago, wasn't it, that the conflict between Pakistan and India was so heated that we were worried that they might use their nuclear technology, which both countries apparently have. That kind of issue has to be brought before the global family of nations. And the UN provides the forum on which these nations can air their views and where they can be told by other nations what they are doing, how it is affecting the other nations. This is an agreement they are now, which wants to go its own way, according to our leaders in the Bishop of Iraq. And this is being considered, as we see, by the United Nations. And it's interesting that no country can rightfully chart a course that might endanger other nations. This thing is understood by most people of goodwill today, and I think the United States grasps this because they're working very hard within the United Nations now to convince the government that they should sign on to some initiative to deal with Iraq. So they realize, apparently, that you have to have, if not a general consensus, you have to have a fairly broad support for initiatives. This is a way to diffuse tension, to bring stability, to create a kind of equal grim when there is conflict that the UN is beautifully situated to provide.
Absolutely. Let's refer back to that the poem that no man is an island, or no state, or no nation is an island. You know, can't be an island in a world of nations. And it goes back to what you said earlier about synthesis, too. Human consciousness is moving in the direction of synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
More and more we see this, it's working out, because they're coming together, groups of people to form these more synthetic and more cooperative efforts. Also, if we try to go all along, I think that we're waiting since high tide.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole land back is this movement, vocal and consistent, such as that hand.
Oh, I'm thinking here, you know, young conscience, the creation, we're one. This is why I'm talking here, because we're all one. Say, sisters. Even if they have an authority through intellectual stories, pure people, on some level, they knew it when they know that, but it will survive together, but we'll go down together. This is a sense of sisters, most fundamental expression, isn't it?
Sure it is, and as I said earlier, the fact that we even formed the United Nations, which in fact was kind of the second incarnation of the old League of Nations that was started back in the 1920s, that didn't happen, or it kind of fell apart, because there wasn't this cooperative conscience present until the crisis of World War II, when we realized finally that something new, something better had to be produced to find a way to resolve, to help us, a forum that would help us resolve these questions in a more synthetic way. And so that's why human consciousness was ready. And it instinctively picks up on this drive towards synthesis.
It's interesting that United Nations is an organization that was formed out of a two-phased war. The Alice Bailey writings view the World Wars 1 and 2 as essentially one war. And you mentioned the fact that the first phase of that war, which we call World War 1, didn't bring about the forming of a successful League of Nations. And so World War 2 followed. It suggests that the karmic pattern that was underway in the last century that led to the founding of the United Nations, where gradually through untold suffering and the loss of millions and millions of lives, people realized there has to be a better way to solve our differences. And so as troubled and as sometimes inept and difficult as the UN system is, it's all we've got on a global level for dealing with these world problems. Today we're at a stage where problems really are very seldom confined to one nation. They extend almost automatically. They spill over the borders in a way that they never used to. We need a global forum for resolving these problems, and the UN is a system that's in place. Instead of criticizing it, why don't we work with it and help to make it better?
I always think of the United Nations as a spiritual organization, because it's spending as much time attempting to unite mankind as scientists did in trying to divide the atom that blows up and destroys mankind. Does the United Nations have a spiritual destiny?
Absolutely, and I think this was understood in the very beginning. The writings of Alice Bailey give the account of how the UN was founded at the conference in San Francisco in April 1945 at a time of tremendous spiritual significance in the Ageless Wisdom teaching. And the book The Externalization of the Hierarchy by Alice Bailey goes into this enormous spiritual tide of energy that brought World War II to an end, and humanity to the point where it was ready for a global initiative.
And also in the Bailey books, we read a lot about great beings behind the scenes that are really working at the founding of the United Nations. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it started back with the League of Nations. There was a great spiritual idea at that time put forth that finally worked its way out into the political world through the efforts of President Wilson. Mm-hmm. And this was a great spiritual event at that time, and it's an idea that just wouldn't go away and had to develop. And so there is in the behind the scenes in the spiritual hierarchy a great push and an effort to sustain this organization.
And if you don't believe it, go and visit the United Nations. You can take a tour of the UN and you can be in the atmosphere of the place and see people from all corners of the world working together. And you realize then, I think, what an opportunity it is for humanity to find a new way to resolve differences.
And once again, if you'd like our gift, we'll be happy to send it out for you. Just give us a call and you'll get that gift. 1-866-695-8247. 1-866-695-8247. The easy way, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. L-U-C-I-S. L-U-C-I-S. Think of New York LUCIS. That's about all the time we have for our discussion today. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.